Howdy, y'all. Thanks for joining me. I don't know if you've done seen my Twitter or my Facebooks recently, but I said I'd be reading out to all those what is interested from my book, Contending Perspectives in Economics. Well, I'm going to start right now. But this particular video, I'm going to give you a little bit of background. I'm going to give you some information what ain't in here to start with. Now, let's see, where do I begin? In the fall of 2006, at the university where I am employed, we had a departmental retreat. And at that retreat, one of my colleagues brought up the fact that sometimes our students have difficulty moving from one professor to another when they might be coming from different schools of thought. Now, we didn't really teach different schools of thought, or rather teach them that different schools of thought existed. In fact, this is quite common at all universities, probably throughout the world. The attitude at most institutions is that there's only one school of thought, and that is neoclassicism, right? So we don't have a tradition in our discipline of introducing our students to various approaches. There's monetarists versus neoclassical Keynesians. But that's like saying there's Methodists versus Presbyterians. Well, hell, if I'm a Buddhist, those look pretty much the same to me. So, we decided at that meeting that perhaps we should have an individual course devoted simply to introducing students to various different schools of thought in economics, and not the ones what is real close to each other, but the ones that's far away. All right? Now, on top of that, we decided to make it a required course. So this is all in fall of 1980. That was when I started there. In the fall of 2006. Now, we taught the first round of it in fall of 2007, and I assigned this book right here. And it's a fine book, all right? Let's see, I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. It's an edited volume by Douglas Mayer and Ann G. Miller, all right? And it's got a chapter on, the philosophy and methodology of economics, the Austrian school, the neoclassical school, macroeconomics of the Chicago school, orthodox Keynesian school, post-Keynesian school, institutionalist school, and Marxian and radical economics. And so I used this for a couple years, and again, it was a very useful book, very timely volume. But publication date, let's see here, 1991, all right? So I'm teaching this in 2007, and the volume is from 1991. Plus, it's an edited volume, so you've got different authors of each chapter, and I found that uneven. I wish there'd been a single author of the whole thing. And what was probably the worst for me was that I felt as if sometimes the chapter was clearly written by somebody who wasn't a member of that school of thought. So they were subtly being critical of that approach. Well, are we trying to teach the students, or are we trying to convert the students? So I didn't like that so much. So anyway, this was published by Edward Elgar Publishing Limited. And at the economics convention, don't remember what year it was, I stopped by the Edward Elgar booth. And I said to Mr. Edward Elgar himself, I said, I'm using y'all's book, and I love this book. But do you have another one? Perhaps one more recent? Now, I swear to you, to this day, I do not know how this happened. I assume that he used a Jedi mind trick on me. I believe what he probably did was saying, you don't want to find a new book, you want to write a new book. And somehow I walked away having agreed to do something that had never crossed my mind. My main areas being international economics and exchange rates, it had never crossed my mind to write something on different schools of thought. But like I said, he did a mind trick on me. And so I'm walking away thinking, yes, I must write this book. Get to the airport, and right away I'm working on it. And the final version was not this. Actually, this here's the second edition, but this book right here, right? Now, so, I told you all the things that as much as I love this book, what I didn't like. I didn't like the different chapters being written by somebody else. Mine are all written by yours truly. I didn't like the fact that sometimes it felt like the author of that chapter was secretly criticizing that view. So, I decided that for every chapter, I would send that chapter off to at least one member of that school of thought. And I'd have them read it and let me know, would you be okay with this chapter? You know, if this came out in a book on different schools of thought, I'm not an Austrian, but I sent it to two Austrian friends and I said, now, would you be okay with this? And people made many, many suggestions. I'll get to that probably as we go chapter by chapter. But I accepted every single suggestion of a change. Everything that someone said from the Marxist school of thought, from the Austrian school of thought, from institutionalism, if they suggested I do something different, I didn't say, well, I'll take that into consideration. I did it. All right. So to make sure, to make this thing as fair as possible, there's no such thing as a view except from a viewpoint. Everything is biased. But I wanted to make sure that my bias was not so outstanding and so obvious that somebody from these other schools of thought would object to it. So I did my best. So I got one voice I'm using. I sent off the chapters to different people. And now it's in its second edition. So I guess it done all right. So I'm going to read to you right now. So if you want to go get you a cup of cocoa or whatever else and, you know, curl up there in front of the fire, don't curl up too much because that's all I'm reading right now. That's the acknowledgments right there. I'll get to the introduction here before long. But for right now, I'm just giving you some background information. All right. This is what I said under acknowledgments. I was surprised and delighted. Oh, when we get to the regular chapters, I'll stop doing the cowboy thing and just read it regular so that you can relax and not have to listen to. I was surprised and delighted. But I'm going to do that right now, though, if that's okay with you. I was surprised and delighted when Alex O'Connell contacted me to say that she and Matt Pittman, they both work at Routledge. I'm sorry, that's the other place where I have a book published. Edward Elgar. Were curious to see if I would be willing to do a second edition of this book. Yes! Exclamation point. Not only was it gratifying to know that it was sufficiently popular to warrant an update, but I had left serious work undone. While I had intended from the start to include a chapter on sustainable economics, by the end of the process, I just did not have it in me. I started to write, I ran out of energy, kind of like a little joke on sustainable and climate. Anyway, writing about someone else's school of thought turns out to be very demanding. And I actually considered quitting the project several times. But with the support of my wife, my daughters, and the folks at Elgar, I pressed on and finished the first edition, save that one chapter. Needless to say, climate change is the issue that may define the next century, perhaps even millennium. For that reason, I always had a bit of an empty feeling regarding the first edition, a sense that I missed an important opportunity. That this is no longer true is thanks in large part to Richard Norgaard at University of California, Berkeley, and Clive Spash at Vienna University of Economics and Business. When setting out to do the research on ecological economics, I took a chance emailing them, and they both very kindly responded. More than that, they forwarded extensive reading materials and sent long notes that put things into context for me and clarified my points of confusion. It was a tremendous help. In terms of the rest of the book, my wife, Melanie, not only continued to be enthusiastic about this project, there's actually a funny story about that, I may tell you in a minute, but she also read several chapters and suggested revisions. Both of my daughters, Meg and Alex, did the same, as did one of their friends, Duncan Griffin. Meg, a PhD candidate in linguistics, she should probably finish up her dissertation here by spring semester, was particularly helpful in cleaning up the introduction where I had apparently made some misstatements regarding language. I would also like to thank the university, college, and my department and all my colleagues therein. They are truly supportive and I am lucky to work there. Incidentally, the attention we pay to contending perspectives in our curriculum is regularly selected by graduating students as the department's greatest programmatic strength. But that's not all. Because of the nature of this volume, I thought it vital to have each of the heterodox chapters reviewed by one or more members of that particular school of thought. This was very important to me as I wanted to make sure that everybody thought they were treated fairly. Their help was invaluable, and to the best of my knowledge, I incorporated every single criticism and comment, save one. Proceeding in the order that those schools of thought are introduced, Andrew Kleiman of Pace University was of tremendous help in revising the Marxism chapter. He not only told me what I had done wrong, he provided me specific references for use in my corrections. He not only told me about six single-spaced pages worth of what I had done wrong, and he was right, he also showed me how to fix it. Sam Bostaff at University of Dallas, that was my first ever job interview, by the way, was with him. He's a wonderful man. Took time from his retirement to help me improve the Austrian economics chapter. My own colleague here at TCU, Doug Butler, also offered his insights on that chapter, and he helped me with my explanation of how economic science really works in chapter 2. It should be noted that he did this just days after the birth of his first child, that he then named after me. That first, not true. Pavlina Chernova, who is at Bard College and Levy Economic Institute, you've probably heard of her. Her excellent critique of the chapter on post-Keynesianism caused me to undertake a significant refocus of the discussion of their policy recommendations and to clarify several important issues I had earlier skimmed over. Paul Dale Bush at Cal State University Fresno read and commented on the institutionalism chapter, and he was especially helpful in getting me to rethink the link between that school of thought and post-Keynesianism. Fellow board game geek and TCU economics colleague Stephen Quinn gave me comments on the new institutionalist chapter. One of his was the only recommendation I ignored. He asked that I remove his research from the discussion on the grounds that he is not a, quote, big name, unquote. Unfortunately for him, the article in question served to very nicely illustrate a point, so I left it in there. Finally, Jillian Hewitson at University of Sydney and Janice Peterson at Cal State Fresno gently but firmly corrected my many missteps in the feminist economics chapter. I am grateful for their commentary and the many sources they provided. All right. So this is first edition of the book, right? So I'm thinking, all right, I'm not going to do the sustainability chapter anymore. This is the last chapter, the feminist chapter. All right, I got something written up. I'm going to send it out to Jillian and Janice. And I can remember very clearly one of them in their response writing, I'm sorry, John, but I fundamentally disagree with you. Well, after crying for several hours and wandering off into one of the fields and talking to the cattle and so forth, I finally bucked up my courage about 2 weeks later and went back through, and they were absolutely right. And I'm pleased to say that in the end, they liked the chapter. So the whole sending it off to somebody sure sounded like a good idea before I started. And then when I actually got to doing it, it's like, oh my God, I got to make some changes. But in the end, I'm glad I did it, because it would not be the book that it is without their tremendous help. Finally, Richard Norgaard of UC Berkeley, who was mentioned above, vetted my chapter on ecological economics. He corrected a number of my misperceptions and made sure I included important concepts I had omitted. I want to also be sure to thank my editor at Edward Elgar Publishing, Alex O'Connell. She was very helpful and supportive and always left me feeling as if she had complete confidence in me. That was a real boost when I was worn down. And as always, I am grateful for the help of all the individuals above, but any remaining errors are my own. All right. Now, I mentioned while I was reading that, I was going to tell you a funny story. And then this will finish off the introductory video, and then the next one I'm going to do is going to be on chapter one, which I called Introduction. All right. So anyway, I mentioned in there that my wife was very enthusiastic about the project. All right, so let's see how I can tell this story. We had a visitor here at the university, and I went to go out and pick him up. And this, the first edition of this was still in draft form. And I thought, I'll bet he'll be interested in this. So I'm going to print the whole thing out. I'm going to get a hole puncher, you know, and put it together in a binder. And I'm going to give it to him. See if he might want to read it. So I went and picked him up at the hotel. And we're riding towards the university. And I reach in the back seat and I pull out that binder and I hand it to him. And he looked a little bit like a deer in the headlights at night driving here through rural Texas here. And he's flipping the pages and he looks up at me and he says, I'm writing the same book. So when I got home, my wife said, but you got your copy back, right? Well, no, I mean, you're kidding, right? You got your copy back, because I mean, whether somebody means to or not, they're going to be influenced by that. John, she said, get upstairs right now and continue writing. You need to finish this as soon as possible. And so I did. So there was a lot of pressure from my wife. I tell you, I almost cracked under it. But she said, now that you've given it out to somebody else who's also doing the same thing, and he wasn't doing exactly the same thing, but it was a similar project. But anyway, that was one of the reasons why she was so supportive and so wanted me to get done. All right, well, I hope this whetted your appetite for this fascinating book here. Now, I got to tell you, I'm currently listening to, you might have heard of it, Lord of the Rings on audiobook. And well, I've got another game right here, Lord of the Rings. And great game. The individual reading it is Andy Serkis, who, of course, as you probably know, played Gollum in the movie version of the books. And he does all kind of great voices for everybody. And that's really putting some pressure on me. You know, do I do like an Ayn Rand voice for the Austrian, or I try to talk like Karl Marx for the Marxist chapter? I think I'm just going to stick with me. I have a tough enough time doing me as it is. So I want to apologize in advance. There's not going to be any funny voices or anything like that in the video. All you're going to get is me. Thank you very much for listening/watching, and may the force be with you.